Tantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents When Evil Finds Us by Linda J. White, narrated by Vanessa Daniels. Then the Lord God said, "Behold, the man has become like one of us in knowing good and evil." Genesis chapter 3, verse 22a. Chapter 1. Laura Tanner peered into the darkness. She'd been happy to give her coworker a ride home, even if it was the opposite of the direction she normally took. But Joyce's house was down a long driveway, off a rural half-gravel, half-dirt, narrow road through a hilly, wooded area. Now, having dropped Joyce off, she was apparently lost. She was having trouble finding her way back out of the maze of private drives and lanes that branched off like witches' fingers from the main access road. Having grown up in the mountains, Laura was no stranger to inky black nights or dirt roads, but this one, rutted, edged by overgrown brush and dark trees with wind-rattled branches, creeped her out. The air felt thick, pregnant with rain. The wind blew strong, whipping leaves into a frenzy and pelting down acorns and twigs that rattled against her car's roof. A good-sized branch fell on the hood with a loud crack, jolting her. She gasped, then forced herself to swallow her fear. She came to a fork and searched her memory. Rain began to fall. Which way to turn? She looked behind her to see if she could recognize the path she'd taken. A gust of wind shook her car, prodding her forward. With no landmarks to guide her, no visible houses, signs, or fences, she took a guess and turned right. Her stomach knotted, and a fine sweat broke out on her neck. She gripped the wheel. "How old are you, 5? Laura chided herself. "Afraid of the dark, are you?" She pushed on, but when the gravel disappeared and the ruts grew larger and edges of the road closed in, she knew she'd gone the wrong way. She felt her courage being squeezed right out of her. She was in trouble, and there was no place to turn around. Nathan Tanner checked his watch for the 5th time in 15 minutes. He'd expected his wife to be late, but this late? 8 o'clock? Laura had called to say she was taking a coworker home. They'd probably left shortly after 5. Could she have had an accident? Why wasn't she answering his calls? Frustrated, he began to pace, his artificial legs stabbing him with every step. Which coworker? Where did she live? Could he trace Laura's steps? Why hadn't he asked more questions? Why weren't he and Laura location sharing on their phones? His little Springer Spaniel Sprite watched him from her bed in the corner of the cabin's great room, her brown eyes full of concern. Who could he call? He jerked out his phone again. Whose number did he have? Scrolling through his contacts, he saw none of her coworkers. Then he remembered he'd had to call Laura's boss one time when Laura was sick. Was it a cell phone? He went through his recents until he found an unlabeled number. He tried it. No, that was a business. So was the second one. But on the third try, he connected with Laura's boss, Nancy Olmsted. Joyce Summer, Nancy said, probably was the co-worker. She'd heard them talking about Joyce needing a ride. A minute later, she texted Joyce's contact information to Nate. He called the number. No answer.
"Come on," Nate said to Sprite. "We gotta find that woman."
Laura's mouth felt stuffed with cotton. She slowed her car almost to a stop. The trees shook around her, debris flying everywhere. She picked up her phone. She should call Joyce for help. Or Nate. Oh, it would be good to hear Nate's voice right now. But she had no signal. Frustrated, she tossed her phone onto the passenger seat. She heard it slide off the edge, falling next to the door. She fought off a stab of despair and pressed forward into the darkness. Soon, a rusted-out car appeared off to the side. Then there was another and another, and finally her headlights caught a flash of white. A small house, almost overgrown with weeds and bushes. No lights on. Surely there'd be a place to turn around. She looked left and right, leaning forward over the steering wheel to peer into the darkness. Was there an open spot? The front yard, maybe? Her RAV4 wasn't that big. Maybe if she edged up to the right and... The interior of her SUV suddenly lit up. She checked her rearview mirror. Headlights behind her bounced in the ruts. Who could this be? The resident? Who would live in a shack like this? A pickup truck pulled up behind her, blocking her in. Hopefully it was the resident. She opened her door and got out to apologize and explain herself. Her heart hammered. Rain splatted the windshield of Nate's Tahoe as he drove swiftly through the streets of town, passing Laura's library, the single grocery store, a few churches, and then the old elementary school, now repurposed as the county social services office.
I should have been sharing locations with her, he told his dog.
Sprite sat primly on the front passenger seat, peering forward, her ears twitching as he spoke. Normally she rode in the back, but he needed her with him now, needed her close by. This dog that seemed to understand what he was feeling before he did. In his mind, Nate went over possibilities. Laura's RAV4 was getting old, although it had proven reliable. Could it have broken down? Then why hadn't she called him? Could she have run out of gas? Not like her. An accident? Always a possibility. Could she just be talking with her friend, staying later than she planned? No. No way would she do that without letting him know. He tried calling this Joyce person and had gotten no answer. That gave weight to the accident theory. He tried suppressing his imagination, blocking out horrible thoughts before they grew into catastrophes. It didn't work. Something bad had happened. He could feel it in his gut. One more attempt and Joyce finally answered her phone. Why, yes, she dropped me off over an hour ago, she told Nate. He pressed down on the accelerator, and he prayed. The road back to Joyce's house could barely be called a road. Rutted, half-graveled, a lane and a half wide, Nate eased down it. He made it to Joyce's house, turned around, and started back. Where could she be, this woman he loved? His eyes strained to see in the dark. Despite the rain, now steadily falling, Nate lowered the two front windows so he could see better side to side. Could she have run off this narrow road? But trees were so close, she couldn't get far. He'd be able to see her, right? Even with the rain? Suddenly, Sprite stood up, put her paws on the door, and leaned out of the open window. She opened her mouth, capturing every molecule of some scent that interested her. Nate knew that behavior, knew it well. Then she let loose barking.
What? Nate stopped his Tahoe. What is it, girl?
Sprite didn't even glance at him. She jumped out of the car, yelping as she hit the ground on her arthritic joints, and raced into the woods, still barking. Nate threw the gear shift into park, turned off the engine, grabbed a flashlight, and opened his door, his heart racing. He slipped and fell on the muddy ground, slamming his leg into something sharp. He pulled himself back up, swallowed the pain, and followed his barking dog. Then he saw her, Laura, running out of the woods with Sprite next to her. She was wet, muddy, her hair plastered to her head, and she was crying.
Laura!
He ran to her, and she fell into his arms.
Help me! Please help me! They're coming! Oh, Nate, help me!
Who's coming? Laura, what's going on?
We have to go, she sobbed. Get me out of here! Nate, help me! Run!
And so he did. By the time they got back to the main road, Laura had said enough through her deep sobs to skyrocket Nate's blood pressure. His head felt like it was in a vise.
We're calling the cops,
he growled, pulling into the first gas station he saw.
No, no, I can't. I can't go back there, Laura cried.
You just gonna leave your car?
His voice was sharp, driven by his fear and anger. She cried harder and louder. Then he looked at her, this woman he loved. She was strong, bold, brave. He'd seen her courage. She was not one to panic. But now, she was nearly hysterical. He softened his voice.
Laura, you're alive. That's all that matters.
He reached over and took her hand.
Ain't nothing gonna happen to you when I'm with you. You don't have to go back there. But we are calling the cops. We're getting your car back, and we're putting those folks on the law enforcement radar. Now you cry as much as you need to. I'm calling the cops.
Chapter 2. I was surprised that Nate and Laura weren't home when I arrived at 9 p.m. They were usually early to bed people, not given to nightlife. So when I got Nate's cryptic text at 10:15, ETA 10:30, need your help, my surprise turned to alarm. I was living with the Tanners, recovering from a stab wound and collapsed lung, and general trauma after an incident on the Eastern Shore at the end of my last job as a private investigator. Recently, I'd moved from their guest room in the house out to the tack room in the barn over their protestations. I was no trouble, they said, but I wanted them to have more privacy. I was also trying to wean myself away from the lure of their company. The Tanner House of Healing, as I called it, was a comfortable place to live. I was already in bed, so I quickly put my clothes back on. Luke, my German Shepherd, was on his feet, his eyes fixed on me. I knew he was hoping we'd been called out to search. When I bypassed my search and rescue pack sitting in the corner, his ears drooped a little, but loyally he followed me. Abby, Laura's quarter horse, stuck her head over the stall door as we emerged from the tack room. I stroked her cheek. I don't know what's going on, I told her, but we'll take care of it. I was starting to like the smell of horse. Luke and I walked through the rain over to the main house. The back door was unlocked, which wasn't unusual, and the lights were on in the kitchen. It looked like Nate had dinner ready. Plates had been set out on the table, and food was on the stove, now cold and congealed, which told me he'd left quickly. Luke went out on a scouting mission for Sprite and had come back alone. Where were they? I flipped on more lights, just to make the house look homey. I heard a vehicle's tires crunching on gravel and saw Nate's Tahoe approaching. I took a deep breath. Nate parked at the end of the ramp in the back. As he walked around to open Laura's door, he limped badly. He'd lost his leg a couple of years ago, and sometimes the stump rubbed sore. I saw him wrap his arm around his wife protectively as he guided her up the ramp. They both looked soaked. Hey, I said, holding the door open for them. Had she had an accident? Nate looked at me, and I saw fire in his eyes. I could almost feel the anger spewing off him. I tensed up. What had happened?
Jess, Laura's soaked to the skin, he said in a forced, calm voice. Can you help her get a shower?
Of course, I said. Come on. I put my own arm around a clearly distraught Laura. As I did, I saw blood on Nate's khaki cargo pants, blood right where his stump ended, and I knew he had to deal with that. I was full of questions, but now was not the time to ask Laura anything. I had never seen her so upset, tears streaming down her face, her breath coming in little sobs and hiccups, her shoulders bent forward and shaking, like she was trying to curl into a fetal position as she walked. I helped her get into the shower, then I pulled out some comfortable pajamas and found her robe. When she was finished with her shower, I asked her if she wanted to get into bed, but she shook her head, so I waited while she got dressed and then walked her out into the living room. She eased down on the couch with her legs tucked up beside her. I handed her the quilt from the basket next to the fireplace, and she wrapped herself in it. "Can I make you some tea?" I asked. She nodded. Nate sat in the kitchen in his wheelchair. He had taken off his artificial leg and was dressing his stump. I was shocked to see a handgun nestled next to him in the chair. My eyes asked him the million questions running through my head. Before he could answer, Laura called out his name.
Nate!
Right here, baby,
he responded, and he wheeled out to her, positioning himself right next to where she was on the couch.
I'm sorry I'm such a mess,
she said, her voice quivering.
Hey, it's okay, he responded, taking her hand. I get it.
I still didn't get anything. I took the tea, one of her favorite herbal blends, out to her and asked Nate if he wanted anything. He shook his head.
Laura gestured toward the hearth, my favorite spot. Sit with us.
I sat down.
What happened?
She began telling her story. My flesh crawled by the time she described the three men who manhandled her, forcing her into the ramshackle house.
They said I could call my husband from the landline inside. I didn't want to go in, but they surrounded me. It was so dark. They had to light lanterns so they could see. I'm not sure the house even has electricity. I saw mice scatter, and there were dirty dishes and rotten food everywhere.
Her voice seemed far away, shaky, and her eyes remained focused somewhere beyond the room.
It was horrible, she shivered.
Suddenly she turned to Nate.
Do you remember that family, the Mallorys, back where we grew up?
Up Snake Holler?
Nate responded. He pronounced it Holler.
That's who they reminded me of.
Nate shook his head and made a clicking sound with his mouth.
Pure evil.
I swallowed hard, my throat tight. She continued.
I knew they weren't going to let me go. Their eyes were full of...
I knew what she meant.
How'd you get out?
I asked after a silence. Laura looked at me, her eyes full of tears.
I knocked over one of the lamps, spilled the oil. A fire started. They got distracted and I ran for my life, out of that house and through the woods. Ran through the woods blindly, just away. And then Nate found me.
She broke down sobbing again.
He found me.
Sprite actually found you.
Nate handed her the box of tissues on the end table.
Sprite's the hero.
Laura stroked the little Springer.
Thank you, good girl.
She turned to me.
Nate came. Thank God Nate came.
He squeezed her hand. Nate filled in the rest of the story. A deputy's car responded to his call. The female deputy stayed with Laura in Nate's Tahoe while the other deputy drove Nate back to retrieve Laura's car. He described the long driveway and the house, but the men in their truck were gone.
Too bad that house didn't burn down completely, Nate said, his anger still barely contained.
I took a breath. Did you file a police report? Laura nodded.
She didn't want to. She just wanted to be done with it, Nate added. But I knew she'd regret it if she didn't. That's what took so long. But it's worth it.
Were the cops familiar with those men?
Not the deputies that responded, but they'll be on their radar now.
Laura blew her nose and spoke in a soft voice.
But they have nothing. Nothing but my word about what happened.
Were you able to give them a good description? I asked, my former life as a detective kicking in.
I was so scared, Laura said.
She described all three, Nate chimed in, and their pickup.
Good for you, Laura, I said. Not many people would have been able to be that observant under those circumstances.
I was terrified.
Anybody would have been. You were outnumbered.
I know.
We sat up for hours in the living room, talking, listening, just being together. Nate put on some quiet music. I'd had traumatic experiences myself. So had Nate. I knew Laura wasn't ready to relax, to sleep, to even begin to recover from what she'd been through. So we just hung out and gave her the comfort of our company, the dog snoring softly on the floor near us, the doors securely locked, and Nate with his gun. After they finally went to bed around 3 in the morning, I went out into the kitchen and cleaned it up while trying to process everything in my head. Nate wheeled back out as I was finishing.
She asleep?
Yeah.
What can I get you?
He blew out a breath and shook his head. I could see the tension in his face,
the tightness in his jaw. "Talk to me." I dropped into a kitchen chair.
"They weren't playing."
His words stabbed the air.
"She was smart, and the Lord protected her. But it was close, and she's gonna take a while to get whole again."
He rubbed his hands down his thighs.
"Men like that, they ain't worth the air they breathe. It's probably a good thing they weren't there. I might have done something, got me in jail."
"Where's her car?"
"At the sheriff's office. They're gonna go over it. We'll get it when they're done, later today maybe."
He looked at me, his blue eyes rimmed with anger.
"I hate that this happened to her."
"I know." I fumbled for words of comfort. "She's alive. That's what matters."
"Who else they done this to?"
"That's not your job to figure out." Nate pressed his lips together.
"They may not get charged if the prosecutor doesn't think he has enough evidence."
"I know that." He shook his head. I paused, waiting to see if he wanted to say more.
"What's with the gun?"
His hand tightened into a fist. He looked at me, and I saw pain mixed in with the anger in his eyes.
"This dang leg."
He gestured toward what was left of his left leg, amputated above the knee.
"I can't fight. Can't defend her. Somebody came here right now. What am I gonna do? Ram him with the chair?"
His fist was so tight his knuckles were white. "They're not coming here," I assured him. "Unless they went through her car or purse, they don't know who she is."
"I know that. It's just half a man can't rightly defend her."
"So the gun is your advantage. That's okay." He nodded and looked away, the skin on his jaw tight. I stood, leaned over, and hugged him.
"Nate, you're more of a man than most men I know, no matter how many legs they have.
Your love is stronger. Your mind is sharper. Your heart is greater than most people's. You would defend her, Nate, leg or no leg. Somehow you would do it." He squeezed me back.
"Thank you."
I sat down again. "What can I do to help?" Nate looked at me.
"It'd help if you move back in the house. Stick around for a while. I know you've been edging your way out the door, but I think you being here would be good."
"Of course. I'll stay as long as you guys need me."
"When's Scott back?"
"My boyfriend, Scott Cooper, was on travel." "Friday."
"You'll tell him?"
"Yes, he'll call me around noon tomorrow."
"Maybe he'll come down and help with the horse."
"I'm sure he will if we ask him." Nate squeezed my hand.
"You're a good friend, you are."
He unlocked his chair.
"I'd best get back afore she realizes I ain't there."
"Try to sleep, Nate. No one's coming around here, but if they did, Luke and Sprite would let us know." He nodded and rolled back to his bedroom, and I curled up on the couch, covering myself with the quilt. Despite my confidence that those men wouldn't show up, I wanted to be out in the main room, ready if they did. My dog came over and dropped down next to me with a huff. I adjusted the pillow and stared into the darkness, into the swirling abyss of evil, pain, and trauma that raged just outside the walls of this log home, and sometimes entered it. Chapter 3. Laura stayed home from work the next day, and I stayed with her. It was no problem. I had not yet restarted my private investigation business, nor had I moved on to another job. Having inherited more money than I thought I'd ever have, I had time to be picky. So, I decided to make myself available to Laura, to talk when she wanted to talk, and just be around when she didn't.
"Hey, were you able to sleep?"
I asked as she shuffled into the living room.
"Yes,"
she glanced around. Her long dark hair hung down her back in a braid, and I saw just a hint of a pink collar under the black sweatshirt she wore over her jeans.
"Thank you for hanging out with me."
"I am a woman of leisure," I joked. I gestured vaguely toward the computer. "I'm just trying to figure out where I want to work next."
I smoothed my hands over my jeans. I asked Nate if I could stay a while longer, till I figure things out. Is that okay with you? And move back in the house? It's getting cold in the barn. A little smile lifted the corners of her mouth. I know what you two have cooked up. You're so kind. And yes, I'd love it if you stayed. I'd feel safer if someone's here with me. She sat down near me on the couch. What kind of jobs are you thinking of? Not sure yet. I kept my answer intentionally vague. When does Scott get home? 2 more days. I had just talked to him at lunch, and I told him about what happened to Laura. I closed my laptop. Want something to eat? Laura shook her head. I want to go see Abby. Laura connected with that horse like I did Luke. Abby was her therapist. Great, I said. I'll go with you. She hesitated. Would you mind taking your gun? It's right here. I patted my side. She took a deep breath. That's stupid, isn't it? I shrugged. You've had a trauma, a huge trauma. It's normal to be jumpy, but I'm sure those guys have no idea where you live. We slid into our light jackets and stepped into the chilly November day. I know you'll be glad when Scott gets back, Laura said as we walked toward the barn. I smiled. Yeah. He said he's driving here straight from the airport. He's probably anxious to see Nate, Laura said. What? I stared at her. Then she looked at me and smiled, amusement crinkling the skin around her eyes. I knew then that, eventually, Laura would be okay. If you had told me a year ago that someday I'd be sitting on a couch snuggled up next to a man watching hockey, I would have told you that you were beyond crazy. But there I was, Friday night, scooched up next to Scott Cooper, his arm around me, watching the Colorado Avalanche take on the Vegas Golden Knights. Nate and Laura had gone to bed early, and we had the great room to ourselves. Do you call them the Avalanches? I mean, Knights make sense, Caps make sense, Bruins, Islanders, but the Avalanches? Whoa, whoa, whoa! Scott said, ignoring me as 2 forwards raced down the ice. Even the Predators are called the Preds. That kind of sounds okay. Cover it! The goalie obediently dropped on the puck. The Avs, Scott said as play resumed. They're called the Avs. The Avs, I rolled the word over my tongue. Sports teams were trying so hard to avoid aggressive names. The Colorado Avalanche. Ridiculous. An ad came on and Scott leaned over and kissed me. Kissed my ear, if you have to know. And I turned to kiss him, stroking his jaw, feeling the stubble of his beard, running my hand up over his ear and lacing my fingers into his hair as I kissed his mouth. I'd missed this guy. After our 2-year friendship turned to romance, it was like opening the floodgates, pushing the passion lever to full throttle. Both of us knew we had to watch it. Hey, he said softly. The hockey game was back on. I cleared my throat and nestled down in my spot next to him. Luke jumped up on the couch and put his head in my lap. My chaperone. I'd questioned Nate about marrying Laura just 3 months after she came back into his life, saying I thought it was too soon. She'd changed. He'd changed. How did they know they were compatible? But now, I was considering the very same thing. Once you know, right? Why put it off? I found myself daydreaming about wedding dresses and ceremonies and even honeymoons. Scott was such a good-looking guy, with his build and his dark hair. There was a little silver at his temples, but to me that made him even more attractive. He'd look great in a black suit, with me in a white dress. Plus, he was smart. So smart. An FBI agent. He'd been working with the Behavioral Analysis Unit on a study of shooters who kill 3 or more people in one event. Scott was doing the interviews of offenders, family members, acquaintances, and victims. He was working with Gary Taylor, a PhD who had survived 9/11.
A friend of my father's, in fact.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?